Have you ever been scammed? If you have, you know it's one of the worst feelings in the world. And if you haven't, you probably want to keep it that way. So have a listen to these five big ideas from Nobody's Fool, Why We Get Taken In and What We Can Do About It by Daniel Simons and Christopher Chabris. Daniel is a professor of psychology at the University of Illinois, and Christopher is a professor at Geisinger, a healthcare system in Pennsylvania, and previously taught at Union College and Harvard University. Here's Daniel to share some of their key insights.
Hi, I'm Dan Simons. I'm a psychology professor and the co-author with cognitive scientist Christopher Chabris of the book The Invisible Gorilla. More recently, Chris and I co-authored a new book, Nobody's Fool, Why We Get Taken In and What We Can Do About It. Today, I'm going to share with you five insights from Nobody's Fool. Insight 1. You can fool all of the people, some of the time. In March of 2022, a month into the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the international sanctions that followed, I got an email with the enticing subject line, Business Matter. In poorly punctuated English, someone calling himself Mr. Barenshani offered to invest up to 200 million euros on behalf of wealthy Russians if I could propose a convincing business project. Had I shown interest, Mr. Shani and his friends no doubt would have asked me to help pay some minor expenses first so that they could fund my project. Advance fee scams, like this one and the ever-present email from a Nigerian prince trying to recover his fortune, are deliberately incredible, both in that they promise absurd riches and in the sense of being not credible. Why should we believe that someone who emails us out of the blue and writes in broken English is likely to have access to vast fortunes? Why do they think I'm the right person to help them out? Why don't these scammers use Grammarly or ChatGPT to create more professional-sounding pitches? It's because the absurd email contents in broken English are a feature, not a bug. Scams are most profitable when they target only the people who are likely to believe that the pitches are genuine. The obviously scammy nature of these emails filters out skeptics, leaving just the recipients who are most likely to be victimized. The scammers don't want to waste time interacting with skeptics who are unlikely to send money. That's costly to them. But blasting out millions of emails to find the tiny percentage of people who are most likely to provide their bank information is cheap and effortless. It's the same reason why pitches to extend your car's warranty or to threaten IRS sanctions for unpaid taxes start with a robocall voicemail. Anyone who calls back has self-identified as a target for the scam. You or I might not be the sort of person who would fall for obvious scams like these, but the ability to spot obvious scams can give us a false sense of security. It's dangerous and wrong to think that only the gullible, uneducated, or hopelessly naive get conned. Many of the victims of cons and scams we discuss in Nobody's Fool were high achievers at the top of their profession. The victims of Bernie Madoff were mostly well-educated and wealthy. The duped board members of Theranos were former U.S. cabinet members and retired generals. And scientific experts regularly fail to spot faked findings. In reality, any of us can be fooled, if we're the target. Insight 2. Truth bias turns seeing into believing. The Saturday Night Live characters Hans and Franz famously said, "Hear us now and believe us later." The irony of their catchphrase is that we usually don't wait until later to believe. Instead, we hear now, believe right away, and only occasionally check later. We tend to assume that what we see and hear is true unless we get clear evidence otherwise. Many philosophers and psychologists argue that this truth bias is an essential feature of our cognitive architecture. Without a shared assumption that people generally speak the truth, we'd be unable to live together in communities, coordinate our actions, or even hold simple conversations. But truth bias is a necessary precondition for almost any act of deception. For example, in the president's scam, made famous by the audacious French-Israeli fraudster Gilbert Chicly, a middle manager receives a call from someone claiming to be their own company's president or CEO. The caller convinces the manager that they are uniquely positioned to help address a problem the company is having, such as making a purchase quickly or closing a secret deal without too many people knowing about it. The caller asks the manager to transfer company funds, but the payment actually winds up in the scammer's account. The entire trick hinges on the manager's willingness to believe that they are talking to the company head and that they are the only one who can help. If they don't accept that the caller is who they say they are, they won't fall for it. But if we start with a truth bias, a fast-talking scammer has a chance of ensnaring us before we think to check. The same principle applies in the call center scam, when the caller persuades a mark that they need to purchase cash cards and read off the numbers in order to avoid criminal charges. If the caller knows enough about their mark that they sound informed, people don't tend to question as much as they should. And, by the way, no legitimate organization or company will ever demand that you make payments using a prepaid card. That's always a scam. Often, scammers just lie directly about what they're doing because they know that few people will check. The crypto company FTX claimed that the money each person invested would be isolated and not used as part of other investments. But it appears that they did exactly the opposite of what they promised to. Scientists tend to trust that their colleagues are reporting what they did honestly and openly, but science fraudsters rely on that trust to pass off phony results and papers. Outside the legal system, we rarely ask other people to affirm that they are telling the whole truth and nothing but the truth. In most contexts, that would be antisocial. But asking ourselves whether a key piece of information is unquestionably true, or whether we should withhold judgment until we can verify it, can save us from the consequences of acting on a falsehood. Making a deliberate choice to remain uncertain and check more helps restrain our truth bias. Insight 3. Precision does not imply credibility. We all know that if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But what's fishy to one person is just plausible enough for another. And those looking to deceive us know how to make promises sound plausible by using the sorts of information we find especially appealing. For example, when they provide precise details, we're less likely to be suspicious. And most of the time, that's reasonable. All else equal, given a choice between a vague or precise statement, we should favor the precise one because precision often signals deep understanding. Knowing that it might rain sometime in the next day or two is less useful than knowing whether it will rain on your picnic scheduled for 5 p.m., and it shows a greater understanding of weather patterns to be able to make that accurate, precise forecast. But when a marketer says that their brand of soap kills 99.9% of bacteria, or a business guru claims that 13.5% of customers are early adopters of new technologies, we assume that those numbers have meaning, and we rarely stop to question where they came from. Their precision gives their claim a patina of rigor and understanding, hijacking the appeal of precision to hook us. Most of the time, it doesn't matter whether soap kills 99.9% or 99.8% or even just most bacteria. And it doesn't matter whether the actual percentage of early adopters is 13.5% or 10% or roughly 1 in 6. But if we take the precision and concreteness of the claim as a sign of true understanding, we're opening ourselves to being deceived. Some marketers seem to care more about making their statements sound precise than in keeping them straight. We recently reviewed a company's website that promised to 3x your performance with its proprietary training program. But later on the same page, it promised to 6x your productivity, and elsewhere it claimed to 5x it. Nowhere did the company promise to simply help you increase your productivity with their brief training. Meaningfully increasing your productivity with one simple trick might sound too good to be believed. But when we see a specific number associated with the increase, we tend to assume that their claims were evidence-based, and we're more trusting. That might be why myths like the idea that we use only 10% of our brain, or that 90% of communication is nonverbal, are so sticky. They attach a precise number to something that can't easily be verified. The next time you see an exact number attached to a claim, consider that the precision might be intended to get you to lower your guard. A good way to check if you're being misled is to ask whether you'd be just as persuaded if they'd used a different number or no number at all. Insight 4. Surface your commitments. Chris and I studied hundreds of cases of fraud, deception, and misinformation while writing Nobody's Fool. In almost all of them, victims could have stopped themselves before it was too late had they surfaced what we refer to as their commitments. A commitment is a key assumption that, if incorrect, leaves us open to disaster, and if unquestioned, leaves us unaware of our vulnerability. Many victims of Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme found it inconceivable that Madoff would ever screw them. They were fully committed to his trustworthiness. In the early 2000s, we were each separately contacted by a fellow cognitive scientist who wanted to collaborate with us on research. He was polite, he dropped the names of respected scientists we knew, and he had some interesting ideas. For various reasons, the collaborations never got rolling, and it's fortunate for us that they didn't. Our colleague turns out to have been involved in dozens of legal cases because of his long-running side hustle as a fraudster, pretending to have credentials he didn't, and bilking people out of a few thousand dollars here and there. We never thought to check his background, and had we engaged with him, we could have become victims. Many scammers, like our colleague, have committed fraud before, but we rarely investigate the people we're dealing with, even when the stakes are high. We just assume they're legitimate, especially if they sound like they are. In some cases, fraudsters even have criminal records that could be found with a quick search. Recently, the FBI raided an Orlando art museum and seized its collection of paintings attributed to Jean-Michel Basquiat. Most experts believe the paintings were faked and had the museum checked out the backgrounds of the three men who had discovered the previously unknown paintings and provided them to the museum, they might have reconsidered the exhibition. Collectively, the three men had seven prior convictions for crimes, including drug trafficking, campaign finance violations, securities fraud, and consumer fraud. Whenever we're dealing with high-stakes decisions, we should carefully inventory and scrutinize all of the assumptions we've made. Those are the times when a scammer will go to great lengths to set up a big score. Remember, although someone who's entirely trustworthy and credible will come across that way when you talk to them, so will a con artist. Insight 5. Outsource your vigilance. Have you ever wondered why some shops offer you money or a free meal if the cashier doesn't give you a receipt? Do they really want you to have a record of your Big Mac purchase? No, it's a fraud prevention measure, and it's a good one. In 2022, a Jimmy John's manager in Missouri was fired for stealing more than $100,000. Whenever a customer paid in cash, he gave them their food and then simply canceled the transaction and pocketed the money. Generating a receipt prevents that sort of scam by ensuring that every sale is registered, and incentivizing customers to make sure that there is a receipt helps the store prevent fraud, and it doesn't require the store owners to distrust their employees individually. The rock band Van Halen famously implemented their own automatic trustworthiness check. As part of their concert rider, they asked that the venue provide a bowl of M&Ms, but with no brown ones. If they checked the bowl and found any brown M&Ms, they knew that the venue wasn't paying close enough attention. If they could screw up a bowl of M&Ms, they could also make mistakes with the extensive rigging and pyrotechnics in their show, and the band members did care about those. Researchers like us have our own variants of the M&M test. We include questions in our studies and surveys that are designed to check whether our participants are following instructions. If they get those questions wrong, we know not to trust their other answers. Researchers can also use the trick of requiring receipts to prevent scientific fraud. For example, we can make sure at least two people involved in any project analyze the data independently. It's harder for someone to fudge numbers if they know that someone else will be checking to see if they get the same results. And having such a process be standard practice means that we don't constantly have to second-guess or distrust our colleagues. Doing this perhaps could have prevented recent cases of scientific fraud in which prominent researchers fabricated data right under the noses of their equally famous co-authors. These sorts of preemptive fraud detection measures can help. But to implement them, we first have to anticipate what might go wrong or how someone might rip us off. Doing that requires us to spot gaps in our own thinking and procedures, which can be as hard as spotting our own typos. That's why the military uses red teams, whose sole job is to find weaknesses in a plan of engagement. It's why software companies pay bounties when outsiders find bugs. Whenever you might be at risk of a bad decision, and whenever adopting a scammer's perspective is challenging, it can pay to have someone else do it for you. You can find more stories, tips, and insights about deception in our book, Nobody's Fool. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Daniel. That was Daniel Simons with five big ideas from Nobody's Fool, Why We Get Taken In and What We Can Do About It. Also, check out our book bite for Fool Me Once, Scams, Stories, and Secrets from the $1 trillion Fraud Industry by Kelly Richmond Pope. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.